Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon or late evening. I'm Don Allen with my co-host of Studio A, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, and welcome to On Point. Hey, Mr. Edwards, how's it going today?
Real good, Don, real good, real good. Nice, almost fall-like day here in the Twin Cities. We only have an hour program today. Stuff going on with respect to the parent company doing a special, so we'll only be on for 1 hour. All right, what we got, man? What's happening?
Can you say that again, please?
I was saying, what's going on? What's happening? I was just indicating we're only on for an hour today.
Yes, we have a one-hour show today and we'll be back next week at our regular time. Well, where do you want to kick it off at today, this afternoon, Mr. Edwards?
Well, you know, we lost that quote-unquote half hour. Probably want to take a look at the job situation. Don, the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics comes out yesterday. First time in 66 years, there was total stagnation, if you will, to job growth. Not a single job actually secured in the United States. In other words, if 4,000 people were hired, 4,000 people were let go. Hasn't happened in 66 years. But what's disturbing, you know, and should be of concern here on Point, African Americans at the bottom of the total poll again. 17%, almost 17% African Americans unemployed in the United States. And if you talk about the number of people that no longer are eligible for benefits or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you're probably more around 24-25% any thinking on that?
Yeah, I was just looking. There's a massive amount of information on the web pointing towards the president. And is he asking the question, is he responsible for unemployment among the black community in the United States? And when I look at that, I know that President Obama did do his due diligence by putting out millions of dollars in stimulus money. But, you know, as we know, Mr. Edwards, that stimulus money ended up going to a lot of nonprofit agencies and banks in China, and nothing really touched our community. And so I think that this is a result of that kind of that oversight that wasn't really oversight, in for lack of a better word.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the lowest or the greatest disparity with respect to African Americans and other in the group. In other words, whites, Native Americans, Asians, the whole Hispanic Latino situation, legal and illegal, since 1984. Those were 20 years breaking. I mean, what you thinking? I mean, Barack's been president for 3 years now. He's had ample opportunity to kind of get his feet wet, as they like to say, in the Navy. He's had a chance to make some moves. He started out in his first year of his term concentrating on universal health care, which I'm not sure that means much to people that don't have jobs. So you don't have an employer who's paying into the universal health care medical plan. And then they started talking about the debt ceiling because they realized that the Bush tax cuts and such things as that had become somewhat of a burden, if you will. That didn't seem to totally work out. A lot of energy was spent on that. Now here we are going into the last year, actually, year and a quarter of his term, and the president's talking about a jobs bill. What's your sense, Don, what that bill's going to look like? And do we have anything happening here in Minnesota? I mean, are there any plans or anyone suggesting to Congressman Ellison and Representative McCormick? what's the thinking?
I would think that locally here in Minneapolis, I'll speak on that first. If there is a job bill, well, first of all, Mr. Edwards, I think the state of Minnesota missed out on the greatest public work program they can ever have after the May 22nd tornado, the cleanups. That could have put thousands of people in the community to work, so they missed out on that. Secondly, I don't see the DFL infrastructure even really having a good public works program or a job program, because as we said here on this show many, many, many times before, from last year, and then you have said it for years, and I have said it for the last 3 years, each year we get a different amount, a different total of how many jobs are going to be created by whoever. And it happens in the spring, and then it happens in the fall. So we're about around to our fall time now, where we have these people coming out of the closet saying that we're to hire 1,000 people hired in the community, in the black community, or 2,000. And it never happens, but someone once told me that here locally in Minneapolis, the DFL infrastructure can just have intent and say they're going to do it. And at the end of the day, nothing is done.
Okay, well, that certainly doesn't help African-American families, heads of households, pay the rent, buy food, try to keep their children in some kind of decent clothing, apparel, et cetera. I mean, we kind of all know that. You say that to these folks, but I don't think it resonates with them. I don't think it means anything to them. But, you know, a number of weeks ago, I suggested that we at least ask the Council on Black Minnesotans what their recommendations are going to be to the governor for the Minnesota's involvement in the president's new jobs program, if it ever gets off the floor of the Congress. And I asked a question last week, week before you were gone. Did we ever get any response from Lester Collins and the Council on Black Minnesotans and their new chair?
No, we did not get any response from them. We know that they did distribute some of the Heritage Fund. Well, let me put it like this. The Heritage Fund distributed some of the Council of Black Minnesota's dollars to different entities, but there is still a little bit of a balance left there, and we're kind of wondering what's going on. But to answer your question, Mr. Edwards, there has been no cordial diplomatic relations as far as contact with or callbacks. Let me put it like that, callbacks from the Council on Black Minnesotans regarding what their plan is, since they are the folks that are responsible for getting back to the state legislatures and telling them the needs of the community and what can happen. But, you know, I just mentioned they had a total of $200,034 to distribute for cultural. Well, actually, they had $250,000, and the total grant amount that they distributed was $234,000. So there's a little stopgap in there, some more money. But
now this is money that went to people like Roxanne Gibbons for her historical museum. I know that was being highly touted on radio station KMOJ and some other places. Did anything happen? Did we ever hear anything from the Council on Black Minnesotans after the tornado? I mean, did they come up with any kind of public pronouncement, position paper, et cetera, what they felt and thought about making sure that African Americans didn't get pushed to the side of the road? Nothing like that ever happened, did it?
No, nothing like that didn't happen. I mean, I'm looking here at the Minnesota African American Museum and Cultural Center received $50,000. Aurora St. Anthony Neighborhood Development Corporation received $17,500. The Black Parent Group received $1,700. Culture Brokers Foundation, never heard of them before, received $17,500. Fine Oak TV Literary Art Center received $3,000. And, the Sierra Leone community in Minnesota received $49,850.
Yeah, I didn't know there were that many folks here from Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone's a pretty small country on the west coast of Africa. I didn't know there were that many Sierra Leoneans here. Wow. Well, okay, so there's no documentation there. Is there anything in the budget that indicates that in preparation for the job stimulus undertaking that has the Council on Black Minnesotans even done a study in anticipation of these extraordinarily high unemployment numbers nationwide and certainly here in Minnesota, because you have to figure that African Americans here are right there at the 17-18% unemployment mark. The disparity study of October 2010 indicated it's even more severe than that. So was there any report issue? Maybe we missed it during the course of the tornado and all that money was coming in for Louis King and the role of Shonda Baker and others. Did we miss a report from the council?
I don't think there ever was a report, Mr. Edwards, to just tell you the honest to goodness truth. And you know as well as I do that there has not been reports much of when it comes to money. There hasn't been reports on anything.
Okay.
I mean,
what about
we really don't know.
What about
that tobacco?
I just got it going over the checklist here in Studio A. I mean, a lot of tobacco money. I know Louis King at one point talked in terms that the Cerisi firm had given him $100,000 for the job program. Some of that was cited in a column in the Spokesman Recorder by Charlie Hallman, saying that $100,000 from Cerisi. Now, that was from the law firm. But, you know, of course, it was Cerisi that was one of the many attorneys on the tobacco settlement. So was there any donation from the tobacco settlement people to the Northside Tornado Relief Committee? I don't remember hearing it. I know that the Baptist Church said that they were going to get $5,000, which I wonder did that ever come in.
Yeah, I mean, we don't. At this point, I can also say that I don't know. There has not been any, you know, documented information distributed out to show that that communique, to show that success or lack of success. So,
Don, let's do this, man. Let's get that telephone number. Maybe we've got some people out there that can help us, guide us, if you will. We know a lot of money flowed through the African American community through a certain specific agencies. At one point, we were hearing 30. Core groups, core organizations, a member of the recovery team, if you will. And so, you know, maybe some people could call in and kind of help us on that. I'd like to know, as an example, did the community get that $5,000 from the National Baptist, Minnesota National Baptist example? I remember the cheering and euphoria that took place in the room that afternoon at the OIC. During the meeting of the Recovery Group 5000, and that certainly was helpful. And then Charles Holman's report says, and I assume the $5,000 was a part of $47,000 in just independent commitments, checks, and et cetera, for a total of about $1.1 million. So I'm just trying to figure out how many black folk did really got hired and got taken care of. Because here's what happened. I went on kind of another tour in regards to another situation that I'm very much involved in. And I keep seeing all these blue tarps, and I still see houses up around 50th and 51st, 52nd, Humboldt, Emerson through there, still blue tarps and et cetera. And I'm just trying to figure out at what point black folk are going to get a reassurance that they'll be taken care of before we have the first blizzard.
Yeah, that's there's no assurance right now, Mr. Edwards. I mean, as you know, with all the news coming out, that I see tarps. I was over there today, driving through there today. Matter of fact, and there's still tarps. Matter of fact, there's a tree still on a house. Mm-hmm. There are still trees in the sidewalk. You know, the trunk, the bottom part of the trunk, and the roots turned over.
Wow.
And as we discussed last Saturday before last, you know. One of the homeowners came out and ran and caught me when I was filming this huge tree stump. It was probably about as tall as I was, about 6'2", and by about 4, 5, 6 feet wide. And it just sat there as an eyesore in the middle of the block. And I asked her, I said, well, have you heard of when they're going to get rid of these tree stumps here? And she said, well, they're waiting on the Department of Forestry. I said, what?
Oh, yeah, I think you mentioned that before. Right.
Yeah, and I didn't understand
Department
that at all.
Department of Forestry, right. Was this an endangered environmental species tree that we had to wait on the National Forestry?
No,
it was endangered. It was part of the Environmental Act. I mean, you know, God knows we don't want to, you know, do anything to disrupt the environmental pattern. But was this an environmentally protected tree? Is that why they had to wait for the National Park Service to come out on forestry?
No, look, this is one of them old Dutch Elms, Mr. Edwards, where they have plenty of them, you know.
Jesus. Yeah. Wow. Wow. So okay. So we want to make sure, get that number out, Don. You didn't get that number.
Sure. Our call-in number and the phone lines are open now. It's 877-572-4288. Again, the phone line is 877, toll-free, 572-4288. And we're broadcasting live from the McIntosh Studio in downtown Minneapolis. Nice sunny sky here.
All right. And we started out by talking about, you know, the Obama jobs plan. John Boehner, you know, told the black president that Wednesday was not a suitable day for white legislators and that he could do it on Thursday. Unprecedented, by the way, Don. Never happened before. Never before has the head of either the House or the Senate, even of a different party, has denied the request of a sitting president to address a joint session of the Congress. And that was really unbelievable. Old John Boehner, that old tough bartender from Cincinnati, Ohio, told Barack Obama, you know, you can have it on Thursday. Now, by the way, all the boys basically will be watching, you know, the opening of the NFL season. So I just wonder how attentive they will be sitting there in the chambers. Does anyone have any idea what the president's going to be proposing? I mean, and you picking up any scuttlebutt on the links and websites and et cetera?
Well, he did say that he was going to be coming out with a job plan in September, mid-September. As far as the details of that job plan, Mr. Edwards, who will know? I mean, I think the president is smart. He sees what's going on. But then again, there's some folks that, for lack of a better term, have him in the crosshairs. And
let me just ask this question. Should we assume that the Department of Justice and other EEOC and others will be in place to enforce job opportunities for African Americans under this jobs program?
Well, they haven't yet, Mr. Edwards. And, you know, part of this problem is state and federal agencies like the Minnesota, or like, for instance, the Minnesota Department of Transportation agencies, state agencies, the airport state agencies,
airport commission, you mean? Yeah.
Airports, okay. Yeah, airport commission.
Airport commission.
And across the United States. And simply put, Mr. Edwards, there's CFR 49 Part 26. Mm-hmm. is a federal regulation that basically says, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it basically says get it done any way that you can. By getting it done means that, you know, there are certain protected class, I'll put it like that, people that sometimes don't get the opportunities. And in this case, I'm talking about African-Americans or blacks, whatever you prefer, Asians, Somali, Hispanic, Latino community, and folks of that nature who normally don't get the shot to work on Minnesota roads, bridges, and highways or across the U.S. And it seems like it would be an easy fix to fix the job bill if they held all these state and federal agencies accountable to CFR 49 Part 26. And
yeah,
it's just not happening, especially here, as you say, in our beloved Shangri-La. You have the Minnesota Department of Education, Transportation, going on 18 or is it 19 years now of not ever being in some type of compliance or creating a fair playing field. And when you call them up over there, Mary Prescott is the head of the Civil Rights Department at MnDOT here in Minnesota. And when you call her up, he says, hey, you know, you just got $68 million, and you gave one black contractor $750.
Right. Let me ask a question for our listening audience. And again, we've given that number out. My hands are open. I was always wondering this time last year when we were getting calls and people were talking to us about what was happening over at DOT state, if you will, why, after it became quite clear the Department of Transportation Department, or MnDOT as it's called, did not intend to correct its evil ways, if you will, why did not all of the African Americans who were on the, like, the Good Faith Committee, like Kenyon Ignite, people like that, why did those people not resign and protest or at least call a press conference and say what was happening? Wasn't that kind of peculiar? issues. That never happened. No one ever.
Yeah, it was very particular.
I mean, I know that Lenny Chisholm was removed because he raised questions about white female pass-through organizations and companies, and I know that he called us last summer and talked in terms that he had been removed. But I always wondered why the other African-Americans there, and, you know, you never could get a roster, but I knew that one of them was Kenyon McKnight as an example, and I just always wondered how come these folks at least didn't call a press conference and denounce what was happening. Did that ever happen? Did I miss that? Maybe I was on Mars or something like that. Did I miss that one?
No, you weren't on Mars, Mr. Edwards. It never happened. I mean, these people have never happened, have never called a press conference, have never even, you know, bucked the system other than to sit at the table with a question mark on their face.
Okay. Okay.
You know, so.
And the reason I ask that for our listening audience, we were aware of some comments and observations by an assistant secretary who came here last November, and in a closed meeting luncheon, in which Mr. Allen was told he could not come into. She expressed concern, this undersecretary or assistant secretary for enforcement for EEOC, expressed concern about the lack of diversity and enforcement and et cetera. And yet I never heard a response at the dinner, nor did I ever hear a response by the minority contractors or anybody else in a meetup, any of those groups. About
we have a call, Mr. Edwards.
Let's get a call.
Hello, you're live on the air with On Point. May I ask who's calling?
Yeah, hi, guys. My name's Pete. How are you today?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you?
Pete, what can we do for you?
Great. Hey, no, I'm sorry. I really can't hear the other caller. It's kind of really messed up on the audio there.
We're trying to clear that up.
So, yeah, okay. I'm sorry if I don't answer a question that he asked. So, really, the question was before, whose fault is it on whether there's jobs for people or not jobs for people? And it's really, I don't think you could blame Obama specifically, but you can blame a system that's been set up this way to take jobs from all Americans. Now, I know you guys are going from a black perspective, but I got to tell you, you know what? I'll bet you to my bottom dollar that you guys probably want what's best for your family, right?
Of course.
You know what it is there, Pete? I want what's best for my nation. But go ahead.
Well, exactly. I'll bet you there's probably not much difference between you and me. As a matter of fact, I'll guarantee you there's not much difference between you and me.
But Pete, let me ask you a question. I kind of got an idea where in the direction you're going. I can understand it. But can you appreciate my position when I'm guaranteed a chronic number of 17, 18, 19% unemployment nationally, whereas, you know, your family doesn't suffer that. Your family basically is at 6 and 7% unemployment. I'm always 18, 19, 20%, and it's been like that for 35 or 40 years. At some point, does it become more difficult for me to convince my family that there's a rainbow at the end of the hallway?
I think you said does it make a difference if because you have 16 or 17% chronic unemployment, is that correct?
19, 20% chronic unemployment.
19, 20. Okay, I'm sorry.
Opposed to your, he did not want to repeat it, and he's having a problem. Apparently, there's an electronic problem with mine. Whereas Pete's family is guaranteed basically 6-7%, if you will. I mean, it makes it a little bit difficult on what I tell
I got to tell you right now, for everyone, it's not 6 or 7%. The national average is 9.1%, and I have to tell you, I'm not even sure that that's a true number.
Right.
You know, in my mind, that's only the people that have filed unemployment claims. What about the people that have been on unemployment for more than those 2 years or 99 weeks?
Sure.
I mean, they're all off of it. Listen, guys, we're all kind of in the same boat here.
I don't agree with that. I don't think so. We're not in the same boat. Let me just say this, Pete. You're in a boat, and I'm on a raft.
Okay. Okay.
And my raft doesn't have any sides, and so I have a tendency to slip into the ocean and disappear forever. At least you have a boat.
Except there's a hole in my boat. I mean, just recently, I haven't lost a job, but I just recently had to take a 30% pay cut. That's not easy to do, guys. I got to tell you.
By the way, do you see the thing here in Minnesota, Pete? Are you here in Minnesota with us?
No, sir. I'm in Pennsylvania.
Oh, you're out there in Pennsylvania. Well, yeah, I know you've been having it tough out there for a long time. Let me just say something that's interesting. If you're in Pennsylvania, are you in the western or eastern part of Pennsylvania?
I'm in the eastern part, up in the northeast part.
Oh, the northeast part, okay. You know, one of the problems in Philadelphia, the big city, brotherly love, just south of you, African Americans in Philadelphia are 32%, 33%, 34% unemployed. I mean, that just blows my mind, you know what I mean? And that's been the reason for it. You're aware of the flash mobs, right?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Yeah, the kids down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, the flash mobs, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that those kids have been saying to Mayor Nutty and Public Safety Commissioner Charlie Ramsey is that maybe if they had some jobs for them there in Philadelphia, you know, maybe things would be a little different with respect to the flash mob. But do you think it's acceptable for my family, as an example, you know, you talked about the families, do you think it's acceptable for my family to accept in a nation with the level of wealth that we have to accept and ignore the consequences of 33, 34, 35% in unemployment for what is supposed to be the most productive segment of our quote-unquote family, our youth, basically 19,
I don't think it's
27.
Acceptable to be more than 6% for everybody.
Right, there you go. Hey, buddy, we're on the same page, you know. Now, there you go. Honey, let me ask you this question. How are we going to solve this thing? Do you think that President Obama and the Congress is going to be able to come together, or is there too much rancor?
I think that neither one have the answer, and I think that the reason that neither one have the answer is because we have a system that's been in place. Basically, it goes for the banks. It goes for the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
A system that's run by this Federal Reserve, if you ever take a look at what that Federal Reserve is, and how it actually works. It's not federal, nor is it a reserve. I don't know. You know, it's about as federal as Federal Express, okay?
Okay.
It's really not what they pretend it to be. If we get back to a stable monetary policy where Congress actually sets the monetary policy, I'll bet you we'll see and get government out of the way. Whether it be trying to create jobs, whether it be trying to make more regulation, get out of the way. Let people do what they need to do.
Let me question you on the consistency of that philosophical argument that you just gave. You guys just had and I know you were lucky to be far enough, but you just had a big hurricane out there on the East Coast, and I'll be doggone if New Hampshire hasn't gotten hammered.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing that bothers me, and I saw it during Katrina, and I heard a lot of people of the same philosophical persuasion as yourself talking in terms initially that we don't want government in our business. But what is fascinating me, and I see it in Texas right now with respect to the drought, I am amazed at these folks who, you know, populate the so-called red states, if you will, whatever that's supposed to mean, who talk that game when things are the best of circumstances. But lo and behold, you let something happen like a natural disaster or something like that, and they're the first ones to be hollering for government assistance. I don't see anybody in anywhere along the East Coast. I don't see anybody in Texas, including the big ranchers and et cetera, turning aside any kind of government assistance. Now, let me just ask you this from your perspective. At what point do we create a doctrine which says it's okay for government to be involved, it's not okay for government to be involved? And how consistent and steadfast should we be with that doctrine?
Okay. Well, just to answer your question, as far as people crying for government assistance, I got to tell you, I was out of power for, 5 days. I didn't call for any government assistance. And
you
know what, anyone else I know.
Did you go out on that phone? Did you go? Now, wait a minute now, Pete. Did you tell them you went up on the phone and reconnected yourself?
No, it came back on because PP&L, the power company, decided that it was time to do it. You know, I prepared for it. I knew that it was going to come, so I prepared for it. So should the federal government have been involved in saying, oh, no, he has no power. He lost everything in his freezer. No. I should have prepared more and got a generator. But that's neither here nor there.
You're an honest man in that respect, Pete. Go ahead, go ahead.
I think that it belongs to the states to decide.
Let me just say this. You have to understand, as an African American, and I know you're talking to two African Americans on this program, we always are a little skittish about state rights, because there was a point in time in the history of this republic, on one hand they were talking about federalism, on the other hand they were talking about state rights, and we had about 15 or 16 states in this federal system that decided that people that looked like me and were born to look like me didn't have any rights. And so I'm always a little nervous when I hear states' rights, okay?
You're a little nervous when you hear states' rights?
Yeah, when I think back to the time before 1863, the Emancipation Proclamation, states' rights, there were at least 15 states in this so-called Great Union of ours that said that I was, that people that looked like me or were born into the circumstances, in other words, Negroes, African Americans, that we had no rights. If you will, Justice Taney spoke to that in a decision in 1858. And so you can understand. So can you help me understand why it is, as an African American, I should have unquestionable faith and belief in state rights?
Actually, you shouldn't have unquestionable faith in any form of government. Because a government will serve itself no matter what. However, as far as a state taking care of you, if you need help, who knows better what you might need than your local and state authorities? Whereas a federal authority really has no idea. The people in Texas have as much to do with you up in Minnesota as I do with people out in California.
Well,
I don't know what the local area has or the resources.
About interstate commerce and et cetera, because now let's say that we're manufacturing.
Well, we're not talking about interstate commerce. We're talking about a federal emergency management association that really has to take a broad scope and determine what you might need in an emergency. And again, you're not going to have the same needs as someone in Texas, just like I won't have the same needs as someone in California.
Well, but Pete, I can declare that same doctrine if you talk in terms of policy, particularly international policy. What makes you think that here in my state, I'm in favor of quote unquote propping up oil sheikdoms that are as oppressive as anything that ever happened in the Soviet Union? I mean, can I, with my state's rights, can I speak to all aspects and facets of policies by my state government, if you will?
I'm not real sure of the question. I think you said
popping up oil sheikdoms. Yeah, I've taken you into a kind of a different medium. But let me just say this.
No, it's not a different medium. It's just that I can't hear you. So.
Yeah, too bad. That's a technical problem that I guess we're working on here in the studio. In fact, there's if you can't hear it, it's unfair back and forth. Pete, appreciate you calling in from Eastern Pennsylvania, my man.
Okay, guys, you have a great day. It was a pleasure.
All right, you do the same. And hey, pull up one of those Pennsylvania State Nifty Lions, if you will, down there in Cottage Station. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. Yeah. Donna, we got that problem taken care of. Looks like they're having a problem hearing me.
Yeah, I can hear you pretty clear on my end, and I'm just I'm sitting here in the studio trying to get that boxed up. So
Okay, now what are we? Let's get that number out another time. We got about 26 minutes left.
Yes.
A good exchange with a guy who clearly is a state's writer, if you will. Appreciate it, though.
Yes, yes, we do. The number is 877-572-4288. Again, that call-in number, toll-free, is 877-572-4288, and the phone lines are open.
Mm-hmm.
Well, going from there, you know, what's that, Ms. Roberts?
No, can you hear me good now? No, we're having problems even in between studios, because it's not helpful if you've got both of us on and no one can really hear me or understand me, because I can see I was having a real problem with him here.
We might have to switch lines here, Mr. Edwards, and just let me see if I can facilitate that.
Okay,
right here.
I'll just give you a call back.
Okay. I'm going to see if I just can't do that right here.
Mm-hmm.
But Okay. Let me just see here. But, I mean, we could just move on to the next topic if you want.
We'll just go. We'll just
and
go
if you get cut off, we'll just call you right back.
Well, no, I'll call you because if you call me back, it puts a different electronical situation on you. I'll just call you back if you cut me off. But anyway, why don't we just leave it alone so we don't lose it?
Okay.
We got about, 22, 23 more minutes? What else we got locally, man? What else is happening? The violence is continuing. What are you hearing? What's the situation look like with respect to the violence in the streets? Mayor going to get a handle on that?
No, I doubt the mayor's going to get a handle of it because, we have another young man killed in North Minneapolis, the 2500 block of Logan Avenue North, just after midnight.
It's in the paper now, right? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it made it to the paper. And so,
what were the circumstances? Did the story say what the circumstances were? Where was he killed? On the street, in the alley, where?
Yeah, he says, it says the shooting death of a young man early Saturday, and this is from Star Tribune, took up quite a bit of North Minneapolis and with yellow tape and things like that. It said that here, and I'm just kind of perusing the story real quick, about 8 blocks north of the 14th. They have a picture of a house here in the story right off there, and a guy gave a comment. I guess he was killed right on the street. They found him, dead from a gunshot wound inside a multi-unit building.
Yeah, there you
another
go.
Man
right.
Yes. Another man in his mid-20s was taken to North Memorial Medical Center with gunshot wounds that weren't life-threatening. No one who lives in the building would comment. And so the man was...
Okay. That's what
and neither was the landlord. And so, Mr. Edwards, it just happened 8 blocks away from where the other killing happened. And we do have a caller, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, let's get the caller and see if we can get the callers in. Okay.
You're live on point. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, how you doing?
Hello.
How you doing?
Speaking with? I'm doing great.
This is Wesley Smith. How you doing?
I'm doing great. What's your question? What do you got for us?
Okay, you're breaking up just a little bit. I'm sorry. Could you repeat that, please?
I said, what's your question? What's your question?
Oh, no, I didn't have a question. In fact, I was just listening to the gentleman. I wanted to kind of hear him out as he was speaking about the incident that happened, and I was just kind of curious as to hear him out before I commented.
Which incident now?
Talking about the killing in North Minneapolis, Wes?
Yeah.
Okay, we're hang tight, because we're just some more.
Well, the gentleman was me. That was me, the two co-commentators here. Mr. Allen was reading from something from the paper, and I was kind of critiquing. But what's your question? Do you want to know?
Well, actually, my question is that it's about workable solutions. I think that I was watching Mr. Allen on Channel 9 News last week, and he made an interesting point when he talked about that there's no more press conferences on the north side or anything like that. And it seems like that no one now or anymore is sitting down to talk about workable solutions for these violence problems. And I'm just wondering why, and to see if he wanted to expand upon, because I know he didn't get a chance to when he talked about no more press conferences on the north side.
Expand upon that. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, like I said on TV there's children not in school, first of all. And if they are in school, we have one of the worst educational systems in the country. Okay? So it's a fail from both sides. And what I want to, if I could really get in depth, I would say that there are people funded, and I did make that comment, hundreds of thousands of dollars to do things in a system that would end up with success. But what happens is I think people get complacent. They take for granted that they're going to get the money, and the money continues to flow to a certain group who are, I call it a white privilege in the black community. Because they're able to get this funding and not really be held accountable for it. And so when someone like Mr. Edwards or me or someone else comes across and states that publicly, rather than them saying, okay, maybe we're not doing a great job, we probably need to look at this a little bit closer because we got 3 young kids dead within 8 blocks of each other, within 2 weeks of each other. Okay, so maybe we need to reevaluate what we're doing. Instead, they come back, well, those guys are attacking us. They're criticizing us. They're they're not giving us any solutions, when the point is, you know, we've given solutions. We know that, you know, there's $4 million on the table between 2009 and 2011 to close the digital divide for the Broadband Technology Opportunity Program, okay? $4 million, okay? My suggestion from the very beginning was to take 200 kids in North Minneapolis and put these iPads in their hands, okay? Have 13 weeks of curriculum over the summer. Pay them a minimum wage to come and learn responsible social media, Facebook, MySpace, all this other stuff. But no, that was too big of a leap. We can't do anything like that. We can't give 200 poor black kids in the community iPads to play on their iPads. So that idea was a great idea, but it was bucked up against, for lack of a better word. Now, last week, Mr. Smith, I find out that the University of Minnesota spent stimulus money on iPads for staff members. Okay, and I have a big problem with that, because when are the children going to get a bonus in the neighborhood? When are they going to get the opportunity to learn about the technology? The different, it changes every time I pick up my particular iPad. There's a new program. There's a new application. Why do our youth have to be so far behind? Especially if they've gotten $4 million. Okay, there's two agencies, and I'm not going to assassinate the agencies. They know who they are. Between them, they have $4 million, okay? 200 iPads would have cost $200,000 probably, with the insurance and with all the mobile me locators, so they didn't get stolen or anything like that. And then they would have all that money left, let them run away. But they don't even have anything to say that we've had success. We did a good job. We kept 200 kids out of the street for summer and during the school year. This kind of programming could have went in through the school year from September till June, just on what the platforms that Apple has made to educate children. These children would have been brilliant. Their grades would have been up. But, you know, you have people at the table, Mr. Smith, who just don't have that vision. They don't see that far into the future. They don't know that these children have to be competitive out here in the work world. Because, you know, over in Camden area, there is a McDonald's over there. I don't know if you remember, a while back, I went over there, and there's 150 black youth applying for 16 jobs. Okay?
I remember that.
Yeah. Okay? Matter of fact, I think you were there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And so with that said, you know, I went in, I said, this is crazy. I said, these kids have to have another option, because if you look at our McDonald's or in our fast food type industry here in Twin Cities, you have Hispanic, Latino adults and black adults, Asian adults, taking those jobs where we used to have growing up here. We could, you know, I went to Minneapolis Central. I worked at every fast food restaurant on Lake Street. I had that opportunity was there because the economic times weren't so hard. There were jobs available. So I didn't have adults competing with me for fast food to flip a burger in a restaurant. I run a cash register at Arthur Treacher's Fish and Chips, okay? So with that said, you know, there were some opportunities there that and I just gave you one example. There's many examples, but, again, I call it back to the mayor of the city. If he wants to know why the guns are on the street, who's arming the kids, why doesn't he ask the people he gave the money to figure that out? So that's kind of my sense.
You know, in all that you said, it sounds like there's a deliberate attempt to keep the technology out of the hands of these young people, because as opposed to just being on Facebook and playing these video games, it would give them an opportunity to create things like Facebook and video games. And as you said, you know, because one of the things these young people are going to do is they're going to say, okay, you can take this gun out of my hand. What are you going to put in it? Put that iPad in their hand. And then you start to shoot
exactly.
That iPad. You know, start to get creative with that.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up. Go ahead. Just finish your thought. I was just looking for something because there was a 9-year-old, I want to say a 9 or a 13-year-old, I'm looking for it right now.
I can appreciate it, but, you know, really, we're talking about electronics and proficiency, et cetera. And I got to tell you, man, the reception on this program is
I can hear you. Well, here's what we're doing. Let's switch lines.
I can't even hear you.
Okay, I'm going to switch lines real quick. Okay, Mr. Smith, can you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you, Mr. Allen.
Okay, yeah, we have Mr. Edwards in the other studio just switching lines, and as soon as he gets done, he'll plug back in, and that is a fault of us getting here a little late and not checking out everything. But that's okay. Those things happen, and we just have to we have to move on and do what we do. But I'm actually I'm on my Facebook page. This is funny because I had written a story on the Independent Business News Network about the iPad, and there's a story. I'm going to put the link on the chat room. A 9-year-old Philadelphia child developed an application for the iPad. 9 years old. She had access to an iPad and actually, and sat there. And
I saw that. I didn't read it. I saw that. But you know what that does? It just gives validity to that. You know, if you put positive things in our kids' hands, they can do positive things. You know, again, if all that's left is despair and guns and drugs, well, then so be it. You know for a fact that what I do is that I go out here. I turn dropouts into drop-ins. I go out and I talk to young people and bring them back and get them back in school because I don't have a job to give them or anything like that, but I want to give them something that's realistic and education is real. And it's something that, you know, not necessarily to give them but to empower them to take advantage of getting a quality education. And so one of the things that I teach my own kids is that, you know, well, you know that getting bored is the failure to get creative. And a lot of these crimes that are committed by young people and a lot of these things that they do are out of boredom. They need something to do because the creativity, they fail to be creative because a lot of them, again, don't have access to computers and or iPads or anything of that nature. The most they got is the diversion of video games. It's what they have.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Mr. Edwards, are you back? Okay, good. Yeah, that worked out. We're just finishing up, wrapping up here. Yeah, I agree with you 100% with that. Well, hey, thanks for calling. We've got about 12 minutes left, and we got a couple more things to get into, but we'll be glad to have you on and talk about your dropout to drop-in in detail so people can know more about that. It's the beginning of the school year, and you have a large percent of the kids still not in school. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Anytime.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Edwards.
All right, what we got? Anything? Any calls or anything?
No, that was just hanging up with Mr. Smith.
Let me do this just to get the information, make sure people get the information out. Copyrighted story, today's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune. Lieutenant Lee Edwards, no relation, has filed a second a lawsuit in the state courts against Mass Police Department and the chief of the department, the mayor, and officer by the name of King, and two other unknown officers. And I think that's going to be of some interest in some political quarters. I don't expect it to be able to resonate with the African-American leadership or others who are not really concerned about that. But it's a very powerful lawsuit, raises some real serious question about retaliation against black officers and the continued corruption. So for those that haven't had a chance to see it, may want to check out this morning's edition, Minneapolis Star Tribune, page B3, Lieutenant Lee Edwards, Minneapolis Police Department. And by the way, he was successful the first time around. He was awarded in 2009 $137,000.
Wow.
And damages. So, anyways, just wanted to kind of get that in. What else going on? What else they got? What else is happening?
Well, I'm just looking around here, just some things online, and just seeing what's going on. I mean, we've been talking about Ms. Edwards for the last 45-50 minutes or so. It's just really stacking up on the internet. When I say that, it's like people are writing a lot of stories, a lot of credible news agencies are writing about this unemployment, and they're kind of pointing right at President Obama. And
it's unfortunate, but I'm quite sure that his people will begin to craft and articulate a defensible position. you know, I hope he can work out the differences he has with the Black Congressional Caucus, because, or I don't, and I don't know what the static and et cetera, Don, unfortunately, I don't know how much of my comments and reflections really got out over the air. But the president's going to have to be able to guarantee that whatever jobs program comes down the line, that African Americans will be an integral part of it, and we'll see some of the residuals, if you will, and some of the success of it. Failure to allow that to happen is basically going to cause African Americans to stay home in November of 2012, and that's not going to be good for President Obama. And it's really unfortunate, because he's got to begin to apply his rhetoric and philosophy to actual kinds of things that should be happening. Right now, we're in big trouble in Black America, and you're in even greater trouble here in the Twin Cities. The caller, Pete, that we had some difficulty hearing, I heard enough of what he was saying. You have to figure that if it's 16.7 or thereabouts in the United States here in the Twin Cities, it's got to be 25-30%. So, you know, no one can seem to answer what the problems are with respect to the violence, and I don't know if people have a real good idea of what the level of violence is. In fact, I don't think the average person can tell you how many people have expired, if you will. In other words, been
dead. Yeah, we have a call, Mr. Edwards.
Let's get it. Let's get it. Last 4 or 5 minutes. Okay, let's get them.
You're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Hello. Who am I speaking with? Yes, hello. Go ahead.
Yeah, Janice?
Yeah, go ahead. What do you want?
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a few questions.
Go ahead, please. Yeah, go ahead and ask.
Mr. Allen?
Go ahead.
Mr. Allen, yeah. Mr. Edwards, yeah, what can we do for you?
Mr. Allen, how come he hasn't responded to Mr. Hoff on his statements about you yet?
Oh, because I don't respond to Mr. Hoff. My blog is not used to make a Aryan Nation redneck racist give him a platform. I don't need his name on my blog, if that answers your question. I have other more important pressing things. Oh, they hung up, Mr. Edwards.
Okay, I mean, they were talking about, the guy known as Johnny Northside?
Yeah, Johnny Northside decided that my interview on Fox 9, Fox made a mistake, and he put out a lot of lies and stuff, which an attorney is actually looking in as of Thursday this past week.
Oh, okay.
Because you know, he had he has been sued successfully by Jerry Moore, and Jerry Moore, the judge came out with another decision last week that the Jerry Moore will receive his $60,000. And Mr. Northside went on, Johnny Northside, John Hoff is his name, went on a tangent talking about it was his First Amendment right. I said, your First Amendment right is to report the news. And you can't talk about public figures. But what Mr. Hoff did was pick up the phone and call over to this gentleman's job, inquiring and saying, man, he's a bad person and all this other stuff. And so he's done that to me on several occasions. And this last story, I just pretty much ignored it. And I decided, you know, even though he's poor, he has no money, he joined the Army to get reserves, to get away from paying his child support so he wouldn't go to jail. You know, I think that he
needs to have his
heels locked a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, wow. Okay. Last week, got, what, about 5 minutes. I'm concerned about a rumor that I'm hearing as it pertains to the tornado recovery, and particularly in light of the article by Charles Hallman in the Minnesota Sportsman Recorder. It is being alleged now, Don, just kind of get your quick take on it. It's being alleged now that monies were actually taken from the accounts of the recovery, the tornado recovery team. Monies received from the Minneapolis Foundation, et cetera, and were actually used by a person affiliated with the core team to do repairs on their house. Had you heard anything on that?
No, I have not heard that yet.
Is that right?
That's pretty interesting. So you're saying that the money from the money given
to the recovery team, the $500,000, actually 1.1, that monies were taken. And there were a series of meetings in which the issue came up for actual
discussion, and that money was taken and used by a member of the core team and the executive of one of our big nonprofits to make repairs on their home. And I'm just stunned by that. I mean, I knew it was a lot of skullduggery and connivance going on, but that's a pretty serious offense, and I just hope that it's nothing more than a rumor, if you will. You know, these are difficult times for our community. I mean, we have powerful ministers losing their church, if you will, and having to relocate down the street, and et cetera. And looks like, you know, we're just kind of coming apart as a community at the seams, and I'm just not understanding the level of silence about some of these things. But, yes, there's a rather interesting story out there that indicates that it can be confirmed that money was taken and that a member of the committee specifically used that money to do repairs on their house. I already know about the situation with the young man who everybody's trying to say is crazy, who maintains that he received significant money to do certain kinds of work for the recovery team, if you will, coming out of the communications committee. So I'm just trying to get a feel, because the Minneapolis Foundation is saying that there will be a moment of transparency in mid-September when the reports come in. But, you know, you and I know that the $206,000 situation was never reported. Everybody knows that. That $206,000 we are now hearing from the core group of the recovery committee was actually spent in a three-day period. Now, you and I, in closing, were in a meeting on June 9th of this year, when Nikki Norman, Thor, Tim Campbell, Thor, and others made the declaration that out of the benevolence of their heart, they were taking money out of their pocket to buy these tarps and et cetera. And now, 3 months later, we get a declaration from them in the paper that they spent $206,000 in a period of 3 days. I'm you know, befuddled by that. But maybe next week we'll go into some more additional information. But I thought it'd be important to kind of get that out.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Well, we have 2 minutes left here, Mr. Edwards. I know you'll be on Blog Talk Radio on Sunday at 3 p.m. and then you'll be on Black Focus, Channel 17 on television at 5 p.m. in Minneapolis proper, the Minneapolis Television Network. And what are your topics for tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow we talk in terms a little bit about the international situation with Gaddafi, and then we come home to talk in terms of the crime situation on the streets of our city and some of the deaths and funerals and et cetera. And on Sunday's program, we'll talk a little bit about this the whole situation with Lieutenant Lee Edwards, which is another historical dynamic, if you will. Won't be a lot of discussions by the white media, but there'll be a lot of discussions by me. So anyways, that's what we got, man. So we'll get back next week.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
We'll be back next week, same time, same channel. Thanks for listening to Black Focus. On Point. I was looking at your screen here.
Yeah, On Point.
At the screen here,
Black
Focus.
Right,
On Point.
Right.
Yeah, and tune in next week. Oh, wait, with 1 minute left, we have another caller. Should we take
Let's see if we can get him in quickly. Maybe they'll say what we do. Let's see what we can do. Quickly, caller.
Yes, caller. Can I help you?
Yeah, mister. Yeah.
Okay, that's the Joker. So, okay.
Okay.
What was that? Thanks
right.
for listening.
Okay, take care. All right.
Great.